We finished off last Wednesday looking at 2 Kings chapter 11, and we finished off the end of the evil reign of the lady that killed her grandchildren, right? So there's a six-year reign of Queen that was killed. She was taken out to basically the horse gate, just a random gate, and killed outside the city, unceremoniously taken care of. The major player in that was not necessarily the boy king, was it? Who was a major player? Jehoiada, verse 17. Jehoiada, the high priest, was a major player. We'll be talking about him later tonight. Chapter 12, we start with Joash reigns over Judah. This also coincides with 2 Chronicles chapter 24. Just a note, as we go through Kings and reference Chronicles, there's a phrase that kind of keeps repeating in the book of Kings. And the rest of these acts, are they not recorded in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings? Right? You've heard that. We've read it a couple times in here. What's interesting, when you read Chronicles, it says, and the rest of these acts, are they not recorded in the book of the Kings of... So are they referencing one another? Sometimes when people say, well, maybe they're referencing each other. Well, that can't really be the case, in that Chronicles was written much later than Kings, so Kings could not reference a book that was not yet written. And then some of the things that they say are in Chronicles, are in this book of Chronicles, are not in the Chronicles that we know. So while they reference materials that seem to have the same kind of title, a Chronicle of Kings is not something that every kingdom didn't have, you know. So it's like Time magazine for every kingdom, you know. They all had their own version of it, right? So that we're not referencing First and Second Kings is not referencing Chronicles, and Chronicles, First and Second Chronicles are not referencing First and Second Kings, just to kind of get that out of the way. And as we look at, but there are some information that we can look at. Also, 2 Chronicles doesn't mention any of the kings of Israel. They only really deal with the kings of Judah. So as we go back and forth, you'll notice that we'll be only talking where they overlap is when we're dealing with the kings of the south. So just by way of looking at that. So 2 Chronicles kind of coincides with 2 Chronicles 24. Coincides with chapter 12 of 2 Kings. It says, in the seventh year of Jehu, Jehoash became king, and he reigned 40 years in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Ziba of Beersheba, and Joash did right in the sight of the Lord all his days, in which Jehoiada the priest instructed him. Put a mark there. Circle that. That's foreshadowing. We're going to come back to that in a little bit. So Jehoiada is a key player. What did they not do? Which several of the kings of the south, while they did what was right in the sight of the Lord and they walked in the footsteps of David, what does verse 3 say that he did not do? That they still continued to practice what? The high places, worshiping in the high places. Please do not think that that is only idol worship. That is also sometimes associated with worshiping God, but in the wrong place and in the wrong way. And so they may have left it as well. Yes, sir?
Is that because of him being so young still? I mean, he's only 7 years old.
Well, this is a comment on his whole reign in this situation. So as far as his age being a factor, whether or not he removed those places, this kind of first snippet is more of a kind of a playing card. If you had a trading card for this king, this would be like, you know, sort of the abbreviated version of his reign is kind of what this is. But the high places were not taken down. And he actually kind of, like his son we'll see in a moment, starts off good, but ends poorly. So we have this, but what he does do, in beginning in verse 4, Jehoash said to the priests, all the money and the sacred things which is brought into the house of the Lord, in currency and money, both money and each man's assessment, and all the money which may be a man's heart prompts him to bring, which is the freewill offering, let the priests take for it themselves, each from his acquaintance, and he shall repair the damages of the house wherever any damage may be found. And so he wants to repair the damages that have been done to the temple. The sons of Athaliah had broken it and had dedicated the holy things that were in it to Baal. 2 Chronicles chapter 24, verse 7 gives us more detail as to why they were going to be refurbishing the temple. What's interesting is that the king tells them to do this to return, to kind of make this tax and to refurbish the temple, and he tells them to do it quickly in Chronicles. Chronicles gives us that information. They were supposed to do it quickly. They need to repair the temple because, you know, there's issue, and they need to do it quickly. And what does verse 6 say? But, right? Do what? They had not. We're in the 23rd year of the reign of the king, and they still hadn't done it, right? And so, the priests had not repaired the house. King Joash called, Jehoash called the Jehoiada, and said, "What's the deal? Why do you not repair the damages? Now, therefore, take no more money, but go ahead and make these, don't do any more taxes." What they were supposed to do at this point was basically have an offering. As the people came to make their offerings, they were to donate some money. They had this kind of box with a hole in it, and that's where they made their offerings to rebuild the temple. And they eventually did that. They repaired the temple. The rest of this chapter talks about the things that they gave the money to the people who needed to have it in order to repair and make this preparation. And so 2 Chronicles chapter 24, verse 6 begins talking about the preparations they made. And they were faithful in repairing it. Verse 17 says, "Then Hazael, king of Aram, went up and fought against Gath and captured it. And Hazael set his face up," or to go up to Jerusalem. And so Gath, if you remember, Gath is one of the cities on the plain near the ocean, the Philistine cities. It's a Philistine city. And so he comes down from the north, takes this Philistine city, and he literally can look up to the mountain where Jerusalem is. And so when he says he raises his head to Jerusalem, he literally did this, you know, and said, "I'm going to take Jerusalem." It's not a hard thing to do. And so he goes to take Jerusalem. And what does the king do? What does Jehoash do in response to this? In verse 18. A king is coming against you. What are you going to do? You have options, right? What's that? Are you going to fight? Yeah, he paid him off, right? He paid him off. He gathered up all the shiny things, all the monies, broke his piggy bank, everything, and paid him off. Now, Chronicles gives us more information about this. It says in verse 17 of 2 Chronicles chapter 24, "Then after the death of Jehoiada, the officials of Judah came and bowed down to the king, and the king listened to them. And they abandoned the house of the Lord, of the God of their fathers, and served the Asherim and the idols. So wrath came upon Judah and Jerusalem for this guilt. Yet he sent prophets to them to bring them back to the Lord. Though they testified against them, they would not listen." They would not listen. So God sent them prophets. If you look at 2 Chronicles chapter 24, God sent them prophets specifically to bring them back. And what does the text tell us that they did? Turned a deaf ear, right? Did not listen. "Then the Spirit of God came on Zechariah, the son of Jehoiada, the priest, and stood above the people and said, 'Thus says God, why do you transgress the commandments of the Lord and do not prosper? Because you have forsaken the Lord, he has also forsaken you.' So they conspired against him at the command of the king, and they stoned him to death in the court of the house of the Lord. And thus Joash the king did not remember the kindness which his father Jehoiada had shown him, but murdered his son and he died. And he said, may the Lord see and avenge. And he did. And so Hazael came up and was permitted by God to go up and lay siege to the city. And that was sort of an underhanded deal. Because what had Jehoiada done for Jehoash when he was yet a babe? Had saved his life, right? Saved his life from his evil grandmother, who probably killed puppies and dressed in their skin, right? So saved him from his evil grandmother, right? And now he turns around and kills his own son in the house of the Lord, in the court. You weren't even supposed to stone anybody in the city, let alone the priest, let alone the priest in the temple, right? So, you know, all kinds of bad going on here. And so here's a king that started off well when he listened to the voice of the priest. But when he turned his ear to the other counselors, he listened to them and fell away as far as following the wisdom of God. And he suffered for it. His servants arose, and if you go back to 2 Kings, at the end of the chapter, they tell us that Joash, or Jehoiada is his name, is killed. So he has two servants that arise and strike him down because of what he did. So he was lamed or hurt in some way whenever Hazael came up to the city and took all the shiny things. And he was in bed and was slain in his own bed. So thus ends the reign of that king. And it says in verse 19, now the rest of the acts of Joash and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Judah? I want you to recognize we kind of have an overlap. We're going to get into a little confusing thing here. Remember I mentioned there's a lot of J names as far as kings. There's also two in this time period, two Joashes. One reigning in the south and one reigning in the north. And not only Joash, but they can be called Jehoash as well. So it gets kind of like, well, who are we talking about? So anyway, we're talking about Judah at this point. And so he gets killed. And so Amaziah becomes his son, Amaziah, or becomes the king after him. So what's interesting is that the sons of Shomer, his servants, struck him down and he died, and they buried him in the father's city of David. What's also interesting is that Jehoiada was buried in the tomb of the kings. So this was a big deal, all right, to be buried in the tomb of the kings. This man who was a king was not buried in the tomb of a king. He was buried in the city of David, but not buried in the tomb. So that was rather significant. Chapter 13, we have the kings of Israel. We start this kind of section. Jehoahaz becomes king in Israel, another Jehoahaz. So in the 23rd year of Joash, the son of Ahaziah. So we're going back and forth. Remember I told you this kind of like stop and go, green light, back up, kind of history channel kind of thing. So we'll go ahead for a little while, then we'll back up and talk about the kings in the north. For a second. So now we're going to talk about the kings of the north. And so in the 23rd year of Joash, the son of Ahaziah, king of Judah, Jehoahaz, the son of Jehu, became king over Israel at Samaria. And he reigned 17 years, and he did all that was good in the eyes of the Lord. Yes or no? No, you're never going to hear that. You're never going to hear that about the kings of the north, right? You're never going to hear that. He did evil in the sight of the Lord. He followed the sins of Jeroboam, which basically is the commentary of every single king in the north. Some were worse than others, but they were all bad. Okay, so the anger of the Lord was against them, and he gave them continually into the hand of Hazael, king of Aram. So king of Aram was basically, it was his heyday, right? And God was basically letting him come and do whatever he wanted to these kings. He's getting his payday after payday for him because these people were not doing what they're supposed to do, and God allowed this thing to happen. And Joash entered in the favor of the Lord. In verse 4, entreated the favor of the Lord, and the Lord listened to him, for he saw the oppression of Israel and how the king of Aram oppressed them. And so the Lord gave Israel a deliverer, so they escaped from under the hand of the Arameans, and the sons of Israel lived in their tents as formerly. So it talks about the peace that they were allowed to have for a time because of the travail that they were under because of that king. Verse 6, nevertheless, they did not turn away from doing bad like they were supposed to. So anyway, they continued to do these things. But what is the size of their army in verse 7? How's their army doing? How's their army? Not good, good. Not good at all. Not good at all. How many chariots do we have here? 50 horsemen and 10 chariots and 10,000 footmen. If you're playing Risk, that's like having like five guys. Like five single, if you're playing Risk. This is, so it's not good. You're about to go off the map, okay? So he doesn't have a lot of forces. And so he talks about the rest of the acts in verse 8. All the might that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel? And Jehoash slept with his fathers, and he buried him in Samaria. Now, in verse 10, in the 37th year, we begin talking about Jehoash. In the 37th year of Jehoash, king of Judah, Jehoash, the son of Jehoahaz, became king in Israel in Samaria and reigned 16 years. He did evil in the sight of the Lord, which, you know, we expected. They're all going to be bad. The whole Jeroboam thing continues to be with him. And he fought against Amaziah, the king of Judah. We have a very brief sort of snippet here in relationship to him. And we'll kind of mention that when we talk about Amaziah later, about this battle that they have. Beginning of verse 14, we have the death of Elisha. Now this section kind of opens up differently. When Elisha became sick with the illness of which he was to die. Sounds like it was kind of premeditated, right? Joash, the king of Israel, came down to him. The king of Israel, the Israel Joash, came down to him and wept over him and said, my father, and the chariots of Israel and its horsemen. So this is kind of what the same thing that was kind of said about Elijah, right? About his respect for Elisha. And about him as being a deliverer of Israel. It's kind of a chariot concept. And so Elisha tells him to do what? What is he supposed to do at this point? Yeah, take some bows. Like apparently his bow and arrow just kind of laying around. So he says, put your hand on the bow. And he put his hand on it. And Elisha laid his hands on the king's hand. And said, open the window toward the east. So he opened it, and he said, shoot. Never mind that there's people out there. Just shoot, right? And so he shot. And the Lord's arrow of victory, even the arrow of victory over a ram, for you will defeat the Arameans at Aphek until you have you defeated, destroyed them. So this is kind of a prophetical kind of act that happens. Meanwhile, a random arrow comes and strikes somebody out the window, right? Never mind. No, I'm sorry. Straight, okay. You guys are tired. You've worked all day. Sorry. So verse 18, they said, take the arrows. So he took the arrows, and what does he do with them? What does he say? You just need a hit. You need to strike the ground. So if you're going to strike something, somebody tells you to strike something, we're just going to kind of arbitrarily, half-heartedly, okay, this guy's dying, and he wants me to strike the ground with some arrows. Maybe he's kind of already there. And so he just kind of hits the ground three times, right? One, two, three. That's, you know... That's what you do when you're testing a mic. Test one, test one, two, three. You know, you count to three, right? You don't go any higher than that. It's kind of a half-hearted effort, right? And he does that. And what is Elisha's response to his half-hearted tapping the ground three times? He gets angry, right? You were supposed to do it like at least five or six times. He says, now you're only going to have three victories. You could have utterly destroyed them, and now you're only going to have three victories. And so we'll talk about that later. So Elisha dies, and they buried him. And that's the end of Elisha. No fiery exit. We don't get any kind of like information about a parade or a national holiday. Nothing, right? Elisha dies, and they buried him. And thus ends the life of Elisha. But what is interesting in this section is that the Moabites were coming in invading the land during the spring of the year. Now, if we back up to 1 Kings, remember when the kings went out to battle? David was supposed to be out to battle when the whole Bathsheba thing went down in the spring, like on the first of the year, supposed to go out to battle. The Moabites were doing that same kind of thing, going out on raiding parties, same kind of thing David did. So you can't really fault them, right? You know, it's the thing apparently of You go raiding in the springtime. And so there are some Moabites coming down. And so there are some Jews that were apparently burying somebody, in the process of burying somebody. And then these raiders come in. And when raiders come in, does burying a dead body really seem that important? No, let's throw them in the next sepulcher we can find. And so who do they throw this body, into whose sepulcher do they throw this body? Into Elisha. What happens? Right, they come right, them bones. So he comes right back alive, right? He falls in onto the bones of Elisha and goes right back alive. And so that's interesting. And so I guess he starts running too. So so this is an interesting little tidbit here about the bones of Elisha. Now here we are again with Hazael, king of Aram, oppressed Israel all the days of Jehoahaz. But the Lord was gracious to them, and he had compassion on them, something we referenced earlier, because of the covenant he had with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Because of his compassion and because of his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, he had compassion on Israel. Not because of who Israel was, but because who God was, he had compassion on them. We'll reference this later on, this oppression. But what's interesting, Hazael, king of Aram, died, and Ben-Hadad was to come on the scene and took his place. And then during that transition, during that time, also during the same time period, the Assyrians were coming down and giving Ben-Hadad a hard time. So we had the Assyrians coming from the north, which we don't read about in the Bible. It's just kind of extracurricular, like Google historian. Assyrians were coming down, and so Israel was able to take back cities that had been taken from them, that Hazael had taken back. So they were able to give that, take those nations back, or cities back, even with the small force that they had at the time. So that is rather significant. So if we fast forward, we have the death of Hazael, king of Aram, through verse 25. And then we have, beginning in chapter 14, we have verse 25 also mentions the three times that Joash was able to defeat them, which is in reference to the hitting the ground. We talked about that. So now, chapter 14, we have Amaziah reigns over Judah. So Chronicles is back on the scene, 2 Chronicles chapter 25. We are going to be as a correlation here in chapter 14. And so it says, in the second year of Joash, the son of Jehoash, king of Israel, Amaziah, the son of Joash, king of Judah, became king. He was 25 years old when he reigned. He reigned 29 years in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Jehoiadin, and he did right in the sight of the Lord, yet not like David his father, yet he did according to all that Joash his father had done. There is a similarity between Joash and Amaziah in their reigns. We call them sort of like a thistle king. Everybody's seen a thistle? Like the weed has like that flower, and it starts pretty, and then when it dies, it's just ugly and prickly and nasty, right? So that's sort of like Amaziah and Joash were both thistle kings, in that they started off nice, but they ended poorly. So they had that in common. They both opposed prophets. They both had to pay ransom. They both died because or had conspiracies against them, and they were both killed by their conspirators. So, you know, like father, like son in this case. And so we have this, he did all that according to his father Joash had done. And so the high prices were not taken away either. They're still here. Now, whenever the conspirators were found, what did Amaziah do to the conspirators or the murderers of his father? He killed them. What does verse 6 say that he did not do? He did not kill the children, which in that time, in that area, they would have killed the family or the children of these guys as well. But Deuteronomy chapter 24, verse 16 says, no, you don't do that. A father will die for the sins of the father, and a son will die for the sins of the son. Nobody's going to die for somebody else's sins. Okay, so that's, he quotes this here. And so that's good, you know, good job, Amaziah, for listening and doing that. He also went against Edom, in Edom in the Valley of Salt, and he killed 10,000 and took 10,000 also. This city named Selah is also, we know it in the New Testament as Petra. You know it as in the Valley of the Moon, where the Raiders, where they went to find the Holy Grail. Indiana Jones, seen it? Anybody? You know, that's Petra. All right, so they took this seemingly impregnable city. They were able to take it. Yes, rocks and caves, very narrow entrances, so very easily to defend this area. So they were able to take it anyway. And so they're kind of on a high when this happens. Second Chronicles chapter 25, verse 14 says that he took the Edomite gods also. So he took the city, destroyed it, and then he took their gods and bowed down to them and burnt incense to them. Which seems what? Like not a smart thing to do? So you just destroyed this people, I'm going to worship their gods. No. And the prophet actually comes to him and tells him, why would you do that? Why would you do that? And chapter 25 of Chronicles tells us that he ignored this prophet and didn't listen to this prophet. And so the prophet basically told him, so the God's not with you if you're not listening to me. So they both had prophets speak against them. So what he also did was he took like 10,000 men to the top of a cliff and just tossed them off when he conquered this city. It's kind of rough, right? A bit excessive. So that's what Amaziah did. Now, on his high, as far as, you know, I just took this big city that nobody else has been able to take, I'm going to go fight against Israel. Now, there's a reason why he just wanted to fight against Israel. So when the king of the south, Amaziah, had amassed his army, he also conscripted 1,000 or 100,000, I can't remember how many, a bunch from Israel to come down. He paid them silver to come down and go with him. Now, a prophet came to him and told him, don't do that. You cannot do anything with Israel, which we've seen over and over and over again, that they're not supposed to do things together because God is not with Israel in general, the 10 tribes of the north. And so he sent them home. So they had been paid to come down and do that, and then he just sent them home. And they're kind of upset that they didn't get to do any raiding, get any kind of spoils from the raid. And so as they're over fighting against Edom in the Valley of Salt, these guys that are supposed to be on their way home fight some of the cities in Judah and kill 3,000 people and raid the spoils of those towns on their way back up into Israel. And so when the king comes back, Amaziah comes back, he finds out about what's going down. And so this is why he wants a throwdown with Israel. Okay, so that's the backstory. Get all that in chapter 25. We don't have time to turn there and look at it. Now, what's interesting is he sends letters to somebody, I want to come, let us face each other. You know, this is call to battle, right? How does Jehoash respond? He says, the thorn bush, which was in Lebanon, sent to the cedar, which is in Lebanon, saying, give your daughter to my son in marriage. Thorn bush and cedar. Thorn bush, very small, doesn't last long. Cedar lasts for hundreds of years, big, huge. But when you ask for another man's daughter to marry your son, you're saying you're equals, is what that says. You esteem yourself to be the equal of that person. So a thorn bush is esteeming itself to be the equal of this tree. And he says, but there passed by a wild beast that was in Lebanon and trampled the thorn bush. Which is sort of like a way of saying you're not much of a plant if an animal can come by and just trample on you and you die. So this is sort of a fancy way of saying you're not really worth paying attention to. Why don't you mind your own business? And that's kind of what he says. He says, you've indeed defeated Edom and your heart has become proud. Enjoy your glory and stay at home and I'll pat you on your head. That's basically what the king of the north is saying to him. And what does Amaziah decide to do? If you've ever patted a small man on the head, what happens? They get even worse. They get even more angry, right? And so in this situation, he does get angry. He did not listen. 2 Chronicles chapter 25, verse 20 says that he was stubborn and that he goes against the king of the north. And this had not happened for over 100 years, that the two had fought against each other in a full-out array like this. But he goes against him, and the prophet told him, you're not going to win, don't do it. But he goes against him anyway. And what happens? What's the Cliff Note version of this event? He loses, but like in a big way, right? So he loses, and then he gets taken by the king, basically by his ear, drug back to Jerusalem. 400 meat cubits of the city wall is torn down just to put them in a weakened state. All the shiny things of the city, even like the utensils and stuff for serving the Lord, are taken, which they had just remade. His dad had just remade these things, you know. And all the shiny things are taken from the city, and he too had to pay a ransom like his father. And now he has 400 cubits left, or less, of the wall. So he's kind of in a situation where his pants down as far as having a protective situation. Hostages were taken. So all kinds of bad things happened to this king because he didn't listen. Anybody have a situation where they didn't listen and they should have listened and then something bad happens? Been there? I think maybe at some point we all have, right? So now we have, not only have we had two Joashes, now we're going to have Jeroboam the second. And verse 15 comes into play. Now the rest of the acts of Jehoash and the might and how he fought against Amaziah, the king of Judah, the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel, and Joash slept with his fathers and was buried in the tomb of Samaria, and Jeroboam, his son, became king in his place. And so we'll pause there. And in verse 17, Amaziah, the son of Joash, king of Judah, lived 15 years after the death of Joash, the son of Jehoash, king of Israel. Do you see how we're going back and forth? We keep dating each other by the events of the other king of the north. So it kind of helps us kind of put these things in order. And so now the rest of the acts of Amaziah are then are written, the same kind of comment. But they conspired against him. Verse 19, and so he died as well. So he flees to Lachish, and he's killed there. Second Chronicles chapter 5, verse 27 talks about that as well. And he's killed. And then verse 21, all the people of Judah took Azariah, who was 16 years old, and made him king in place of his father Amaziah. So here's a situation where the people rose up and said, we're tired of this. The people rose up, disposed of the king, and the people placed the king, which hasn't happened. This hasn't happened. It's been a normal kind of progression. Or God has said, this is what's going to happen. But the people rose up and said, you know what, we're done. We're tired of this. We're taking this in our own hands. And they do that. In verse 23, it says, in the 15th year of Amaziah, the son of Joash, king of Judah, Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel, became king in Samaria. This is also, if you want to look at Amos chapter 1, verse 1, this is where we enter the prophet king, or prophet Amos enters in here, as well as Hosea spent some time and was active during this kingship. Also, we're going to mention Jonah in verse 25. So with this king, who was the king of the north, did evil. In verse 25, he restored the border of Israel, so he did some restoration. But this restoration was spoken of by the word of the Lord, God of Israel. He spoke through his servant Jonah, the son of Amittai. So the Jonah we know, right? So this was the Jonah. And so he says, for the prophet who was of Gath Hepher, for the Lord saw the affliction of Israel, which was very bitter. And so there was neither bond nor free, nor was there any other helper of Israel. And so the Lord did not say that he would destroy them. So he basically sends Jonah to say, all right, you're going to be able to take back a measure of what's been taken from you. Now, how does that play in? So other nations have come in and have really wreaked havoc on Israel, taking the people away from them, destroying their cities, taking all their shiny things. And Jonah is in the middle of all that, and he's a prophet for God, and we're going to take some land back. And we're gonna, you know, we're gonna stick it to them because they've been taking it to us. And then God asked Jonah, "All right, Jonah, go to Nineveh. All right, do you see why he didn't want to go to Nineveh? If you want to put this in today, all right, go over to Syria, go to Aleppo, and preach to ISIS." That is the same kind of context. That's a city. Okay, so it's a so go over to Syria and preach against. Yes, not everybody's on. Yeah, not everybody's up to current events on that one. Anyway, so that's the essential kind of context when we start reading the book of Jonah. This is why he didn't want to go to Nineveh, because all the things that they had happened against them. And so we have this kind of mention here. So here's three prophets, Amos, Hosea, and Jonah, that show up have a work during this time period. And we finish chapter 14. Now the rest of the acts of Jeroboam and all that he did, how they fought and recovered of Israel. And so he recovered Damascus and Hamath, which belonged to Judah. So there's some discussion about where these cities were and how they belonged to who. But he was one of the most powerful kings in that kind of later period of Israel. So he did a lot in restoring, because of God, obviously, restoring some land that had been taken from them. So very quickly, we got through three chapters of sequential kings and a lot of kind of life lessons. It pays to listen to when God says something, right? Or all your shiny things are going to be taken away. So those are all kind of things that we can learn. But we also learn that despite how evil some people were, God still wanted to take care of them because of who God was and because of who they were descendants of, not necessarily because of who they were at that time. Any questions, thoughts, comments? All right, thank you very much for your time tonight.